Okay, so I actually think that there are important issues to be discussed. There are a number of things that are waiting, including a strategic discussion that's supposed to happen. We have closed session issues. We have committee reports, committee elections, and we have at this point less than 12 hours work time left, and we've got to get something done. I personally was not at all confused by the ballot. I was not confused by George Ryder's instructions. I believe what I said was consistent with what George had said, and the results were what they were. Move on. Move. 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 Move on.
Janice Lane Ewart.
Janice Lane Ewart, Pacifica affiliate. And I stress the last point, Pacifica affiliate, in relationship to references to the need to have been informed of an election process via that which takes place through the local station boards, for which I've never been a member. I also am speaking to the motion from the perspective of having put forth the need for an orientation that did take place, and part of that orientation may have been useful to also provide more information with respect to election process and other activities that may not be as front of mind for me as for other people. I specifically was confused by the instructions that I received because I've never been involved in a LSB election. I also speak to due process from the perspective that there is, in my opinion, the likelihood of the results remaining the same. However, giving people an opportunity to go through a process that clarifies and reiterates the original intentions of the election process that could be easily put forth and most likely result in the same elections as the reason why I'm speaking or motivating for the motion.
Thank you, Janice. Jim Brown.
Jim Brown, WPFW. We were presented with a ballot that had two names on it, only two names, and it had a ranking that went up to five. So what we're debating here is the fact that we had a ballot with two names on it. We could only vote for one or the other person, and we could rank that person however we wanted to. That's what we're saying. So I don't understand what the confusion is and how we can say that this ballot was not valid, that this election was not valid. I don't understand it.
Carolyn Burden.
Thank you. Carolyn Burden from WBAI. The previous member just explained what the process is, what the problem is, and that is that we had
point of order. No references to people.
Yeah,
excuse
please.
Me. I just read
it's okay. That's okay.
That's allowed. Yeah. I'm responding to a point that the previous member made, which is that, in fact, that is correct. The ballot had five spaces on it. That looked to some of us like STV voting. I was one of those confused, and I've been around long enough to have known better without instructions, and in the heat of the moment, I just did not see that. Mm-hmm. So the real question is, are we going to validate that process? And are we going to accept that fifth-place ballot, which is it constitutes, if you look at the directions under Robert's rules, a spoiled ballot. Also, my ballot was misread as it was read out. That, too, is a spoiled ballot. Spoiled ballots require revoting. And at the very least, if we discount that fifth place, which is totally out of order to include that in the count. That was an arbitrary decision, and that ballot should either be disqualified entirely, or at least that fifth place marking, whatever it was, not be counted. Then we're back at a tie and a coin toss. which might be easier for some people to accept than a revoting. But one way or the other, I personally will not let the decision stand legally or otherwise.
Rodrigo.
Yes, I can see faces here that I saw in 2011 at this same place, right? Some of them are here. So how can they say that they didn't know the process and they've been here, you know, for such a long time at the national board? That's one thing, you know. How can you claim confusion when your own colleagues are telling you how to vote, when your own people are giving you the instruction? Now, why don't you go ahead then and accuse the same people in your own team that was giving us the instruction how to vote, right? Now, suddenly, because our group won the election, it's the one that is, you know, responsible for the flow of the election. And when we got these instructions very clear, you know, the bottom line, yes, it is political. Everything in life is political. We are discussing ideas, how we are going to do things with the foundation. Basically, we got different positions right here. Let's make it clear. We have one thing in mind, which is Pacifica, but different approaches. That's the bottom line. So, therefore, we have this system of voting. So, we won, and you lose. That's the bottom line. This is the whole discussion.
Point of personal privilege? No.
Go ahead, Janice. I'm sorry, you don't interrupt. Wait a minute. Let Rodrigo finish.
So, okay. So, when we uphold the decision of the chair, so let's move on. We talk about moving things on, and everything I see is dilatory. Yes, it's taking much more time. We are not going to get anything done this way, and we're going to do motions against motions and everything. And the people that are waiting and listening too do want us to do something. So let's move on. No.
What is your point of personal privilege?
We've been asked by the chairs continuously not to refer to other members. When the words my group, your group, their group, our group, in my opinion, is referring to members of this board for which it is not appropriate, particularly for those who are listening, to suggest that there is not a full board, but factions of the board, I feel personally offended by the use of those continued references.
Thank you. Actually, I think what Robert Rules of Order talks about is ad hominem attacks or criticisms, which means that you name a person and say and challenge their intention or whatever. I don't think that the group thing really is the same, but I would ask people to be careful about how they talk.
It's on this.
You have a point of personal privilege? No. Are you going to give us a
I'd like
parliamentary?
Okay. I'd like to be recognized.
I have you on the list, George.
Is it on the same question, George?
I'm about to call a question.
Oh, okay. Well.
Can I just clarify something on this?
Yeah.
Don't call it yet.
Yes.
Before we do it? Okay.
Don't call it yet.
Whenever there's debate, Roberts asks you to speak to the merits of the question.
Right.
Not the intentions.
That's right.
Of anybody.
Right. Thank
either
you.
Either individually or as a group, which is a separate issue from naming people, but it's still not supposed to happen in debate.
All right. Okay.
Point of procedure.
So
parliamentary procedure.
I decline the floor. I gather there are people who still wish to speak.
Yes.
Point of parliamentary procedure.
Go ahead. Who are you?
Madam Janet Coburn, KPFA. According to the orientation package that was distributed, when? Yesterday?
No. Day 2 days ago.
Anyway, as far as point of privilege. That is interruptible. You are allowed to interrupt.
Oh, thank you. Okay. So noted. Okay. Next on the list is Richard. Let me tell you who's on the list. Richard, Janet Coleman, and then I have three people who have asked to... I mean... Oh, is it... No, he didn't. Wait a minute. Let me just do this. Richard, Janet Coleman, did you?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So Janet Coleman, you Let's see. Have you spoken previously? No.
Not to this.
Okay, not to this. And Janet Cobran are all first-time speakers, and I have been asked to put Hank, Jim Brown, and George on the list as second-time speakers.
Madam Chair, may I be recognized when you're done resolving that? Not about the issue. Okay.
So now we have. Do you want to? Is it something new?
I need the bodies, just the input. Melody Virtue from Garvey Schubert Bear is here regarding LMA discussion because we had told her to be back around this time today.
Yeah.
And just from a time management perspective, whether the board will be breaking its proceedings and elections to take up the LMA issue, or should Melody and I go outside to discuss music licensing with Ursula, because we can accomplish something else of a business nature if you all are going to be busy on these topics for a period of time. And also, Ursula is leaving at 4 o'clock, so if the board did wish to discuss anything further about her presentation last night, I just wanted to make you aware of that you might want to either put her before lunch or very shortly thereafter. But the first question is Melody, because she's here.
So my recollection recollection is that we set a time certain of 10:30 to go into the LMA discussion. So wherever we are in 9 minutes, we'll be ready.
Okay. Very
thank
good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so Richard.
Yes, I have three things. Uzel Houston. I have three things that I want to talk about. Maybe I can get this in 90 seconds. First off, I'd like to call for a roll call vote on this vote. I think the conversation about our group one and us kind of shows the disingenuous nature of people saying we ought to do kumbaya while there is our group one, they, thus, and us. The Olympics are going on right now, and one thing that they give is style points. That last election had no style points. It sucked. And I think the director earlier was saying we could take the smell off of that and do it. It's going to turn out the same way. We could take the smell off of it and do it right and do it in an honorable way, which this was not. Thank you.
Janet Coleman.
Janet Coleman, WBAI. I just want to rearrange my words on the subject of the chair's interpretation of greater intent in an anomalous ballot entry for a fifth vote, because that indicated greater support for a candidate. I, as I said before, voted loudly. I voted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times for my candidate. Maybe someone else here did the same. I think someone might have. My ballot was not interpreted in any way as a louder voice, because it wouldn't be, because this should have been a one man or one woman, one vote. I didn't get extra credit for my extra X's, and I don't think the person who put an X in the fifth position, when there was no fifth position to be voted upon, should be counted either. This election, what did you say? Sucks.
Janet Cobran.
Janet Cobran, KPFA. So to me, the election was flawed based on the actual voting process, the ballot, the voting process, and the vote counting. It was controversial, and it will remain controversial unless we redo it. And I don't know what we're afraid of. Why not just redo it? And it might turn out to be the same result, but let's just do a clean redo.
Tony Norman.
I call for the question.
Okay. So once again, the question has been called. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. All those in favor of closing debate, please raise your hands. Somebody count.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
Wow. Okay. Those opposed, please. All right. Six abstentions. One. Okay. Oh, two. I'm sorry. Okay. All right. So now we're going to vote on the motion. Let's see. I actually have it on my computer screen, I think. Oh, life's not simple here. The motion is, whereas the chair pro tem, secretary pro tem, that's in parentheses, instructed the delegates that this was an STV election when it was an IRV election, and whereas the ballots contained five choices rather than two for an IRV election with two candidates, and whereas that permitted a ballot to be cast whose intention cannot be determined unambiguously, the election just held is declared null and void, and a new IRV election with corrected ballots shall be held immediately. That's what you're voting on. All those in favor, please raise your hands. And now I need a counter.
Lydia.
You guys, pay attention. Put your hands down. We are voting on Manager's motion, which I just read out loud. Please pay attention.
Shh. Stop.
All those in favor, please raise your hands. Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. Richard asked for a roll call vote. I apologize. I forgot. I even wrote it down, Richard, right here. Okay.
Brian Edwards Steger.
No.
Jose Luis Fuentes.
No.
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 Janet Coburn.
Yes.
Margie Wilkinson. Oh, your chair. Sorry.
Chair.
Rodrigo Agueta.
No.
Lydia Brazón.
No.
Kim Kaufman?
Yes.
Lawrence Reyes?
No.
Adriana Casanoff?
No.
Hank Lamb?
Yes.
George Ryder?
Yes.
Richard Uzzell?
Yes.
Carolyn Burden?
Yes.
Janet Coleman?
Yes.
Serene Roberts votes no. Manager Sabah?
Yes.
Jim Brown?
No.
Benito Diaz?
No.
Lizette King is absent from the room. Tony Norman?
No.
Heather Gray?
Yes.
Janice Lane York?
Yes.
Okay, give me a moment. Oh, Margie Wilson's in the chair.
I'm abstaining.
The chair only votes when it would affect the outcome.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. Okay, good. I voted. Thanks.
Do we know your vote?
Did she announce her vote?
No, she's counting.
I announced my vote. Before I called Manager, I voted no.
Did debate during the vote just announce it?
The secretary is counting the votes. Please be patient.
Is that correct? Double check me.
Point of information, Madam Chair. I understand that a member indicated that they had voted, but I'm afraid I did not hear that vote. I didn't hear that name called in that vote, and I believe someone else at the table did not hear that vote. I will look forward to hearing the number at the end.
Who is the person?
Serene.
Yeah, really.
We are
on the
stream.
Yeah.
It's hard.
We are on the stream.
Yeah, I apologize to those of you who are listening. The secretaries are trying to count the vote. Nine yes, 10 no. So the motion fails. At this point, we must stop all of this really great fun we're having. We are now going into an open session where we're going to have a discussion on...
point of personal privilege. We're
yes.
Not having any fun.
I was being sarcastic.
To respond to Janice's query, I voted no, and not only did I vote no before I called Manager, but someone else asked, did I vote, and I said, yes, I voted before I called Manager, and I repeated that my vote was no. So now we have it three times.
We didn't hear you.
No problem.
Okay, fine. So if someone would let Summer and Melody... Melody's here. Melody's here?
Right there. Melody, you want to move around over here?
Summer, could someone get Summer from the hallway? Is someone prepared to open the Salome discussion?
I think one of the directors could easily open this discussion.
Okay.
Yes.
Since we have counsel present, can I propose that we open with the round, allowing any member of the board to ask questions of counsel regarding LMAs before we start holding forth?
Is there any objection to that procedure?
No objection. No objection.
I want to amend that.
Yeah.
Only because there are people who are listening now who may not have been listening last night or people who were not here last night. We should sort of lay out the fact that the PMB voted to publish a request for proposals for a lease management agreement, also known as the public service operating agreement, for WBAI. Proposals were received. Some have been eliminated. The new members have gotten only those that remain rather than the full view of everything. And our FCC counsel, Melody Virtue, is here and will take questions on the subject. But someone should sort of lay out what an LMA/PSOA is for context for those who aren't quite as steeped in it.
Let's ask Melody to do that.
Exactly.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
If you could just do a brief, you know, description of what we're talking about, and then we'll take questions.
Sure. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Local marketing agreement or public program service operating agreement, they're pretty much one and the same. It's a situation in which a radio station licensee agrees to enter a contract with a third party to program a station. The licensee must continue to exercise control over the operations. That is usually demonstrated by having at least two full-time or full-time equivalent employees or staff on site Monday through Friday during regular business hours to oversee the operations of the programmer. Also, it exercises control over finances by paying the bills and then submitting those bills for reimbursement to the programmer. And it also exercises control over programming by having the ultimate authority over any major format changes, and also having the ability and the right and the obligation to preempt if it views that certain programs that the programmer is airing are not serving the public interest and the licensee believes that something would serve the public interest better.
Thank you. Okay, so Melody was here yesterday and answered questions that were submitted by people in the audience. That's not right. What do you call those? The public, not the audience. But at this point, I'm sorry? Thank you. I saw no objections to Brian's proposal, so what we will do at this point is allow any member of the board who has a question for Melody to ask it and have it answered. And I want to suggest that we use the same format we used yesterday, which is your question may not take more than 1 minute, and we'll ask Melody to try and answer them in about 2 minutes. Okay? Everybody okay with that? All right.
Point of clarification.
Yes. What is it?
The public, our bosses get a chance to ask questions as well, right?
If there's anybody here whose questions were not answered yesterday, I'd ask them to put it on a piece of paper like we did and bring it up, and we'll ask Melody to respond to those as well.
Chair?
I'm sorry.
Chair?
Hold on. Okay. Yes, Lawrence? Who are you?
I'm Lawrence from KPFK 90.7 FM. Listen, so I've noticed that the practice has been that you start from over there, and by the time I fall asleep, by the time you get to me. So I'm just wondering if you could...
I'll switch it up, I promise. Okay, Serene.
Okay, so I want to propose a committee of the whole...
Who are you?
Oh, who am I indeed? Who are you really? Okay, sorry. My name is Serene Roberts. I'm from WBAI. We had proposed this as an opportunity. My motion yesterday was for public participation. So I would actually propose that we go to a committee of the whole and allow people who are not directors but who are present in the room concerned, obviously having traveled and incurred costs to be here 2 days, to participate on the same terms as board members, which is to say 1 minute for your questions, 2 minutes for your answers.
Okay. Is there any objection to that? Do you have a question?
Yes. Yes. I think yesterday we agreed that first the board asked, you know, they asked questions or discussed this, and then the public would have their time, and then we go to closed session to discuss it. That's how we decided yesterday. Actually, that was my motion.
I understand. That was what we voted on yesterday. Serene has made a motion that at this point we go into the committee of the whole, which would invite public to participate in the discussion. I want to know if there are any objections to that procedure. The same rules would apply to them that apply to board members. Are there any objections? No objections, so ordered.
Point of information?
Yes.
What process, Janet Coburn, KFA,
yes.
What process are you going to use? You're going to go around the table, but with the public involved.
Okay.
What is the order?
Okay, what I propose to do is go around the table, ask board members to ask their questions. If any member of the public wishes to ask a question, or members of the public who wish to ask questions, I'd ask them to line up at the mic, and I will intersperse public with board members. Okay?
Yes.
Fair enough? Everybody happy?
Yes.
Thank you very
much.
Okay, so I'm starting on this side, so we'll get to Lawrence early.
Point of personal privilege.
Yes.
Can I ask everyone in the room to put their cell phone on silent?
Thank you.
And if you receive a call, to take it in the hallway.
That's right. Exactly. And if you want to have a conversation with someone, take it in the hallway. And board members will take their seats at the table. And we'll all, this is all going to work really well. There's conversations going on. I would appreciate it very much if people want to have private conversations that you take them in the hallway. Because even if you stand in the corner, we can hear you.
Peyton Summer, that's you.
Go to the hall. Yeah. Okay. Now, Serene, do you have a question?
I'll pass for the moment.
Okay. Brian, do you have a question?
I do. Thank you. I have two questions, and I just want to clarify this.
Should I time you?
Please.
This is 1 minute.
Yes.
The first one is we have a large number of unpaid bills at WBAI. Is there any way to structure an LMA so that the programmer pays those bills off? The second is our network is structured so that each station pays 20% of its listener support to the national office to cover the cost of national programs and administrative overhead. Would there be any way to structure an LMA so that an equivalent amount of money came from the programmer to the national, to Pacifica?
Yes.
Hi, this is Melody Virtue. The agreement would have to be structured so that the cost elements of providing programming on WBAI are covered by the programmer. So to the extent the programmer uses national resources for the programming on WBAI, that would be a legitimate reimbursed cost. That was the second question. And the first question was?
Unpaid bills.
That is usually, there are ways sometimes to recover construction costs, but that was station was built so long ago, those are probably fully depreciated. So and a lot of the programmers are probably not willing to pay the debt, and that's not really something that goes towards the programming on the station from when the programmer starts operating and managing the station. So there might be other ways to get additional funding if it were tied to a side agreement relating to like a right of first refusal or an option, which Pacifica may or may not want to do. But as far as what can be reimbursed, it can only be the actual costs of putting the programming on the air. If something breaks down during the program service agreement, then that would be a legitimate cost for the programmer to reimburse Pacifica for. Any kind of equipment maintenance that happens during the term of the agreement, but it would not, you know, strictly based on the program service agreement, it would not be recoupable to get past debts paid.
Jose Luis? You have a question? Okay. Benito? Say if, who you are, please.
My name is Benito from D.C., PFW. And if I understood the immediately previous question and answer, I don't see where there's any profit gained. No, excuse me, the other way around. I don't see, and please correct me. Please correct my understanding, but I don't see where an LMA can help BAI or PFW or anyone else get out of debt. And so, I want to make sure I understood that. Number two, what is the motivation that a nonprofit would have for entering into that agreement? I'm almost finished, because it's my understanding, and please correct it, that the programmer is not going to make no money, ain't going to make no profit off it either. So if you ain't going to make no profit off it, why enter into it?
Okay, I understand your question.
Yeah.
For a nonprofit, why bother? And from the licensee's perspective, it could be because it doesn't want to lose any more money. So it stops the hemorrhaging of debt, and it pretty much puts you at least on a break-even basis going forward. Why would the programmer want to do it? The programmer might want to extend its own coverage area of, if it's an existing station, there might be economies of scale that help with, for instance, if it's an in-market station, you can consolidate back office things like studio equipment and, reception and clerical and traffic, managing the program scheduling and things like that, that you could have one person do for their own station and for the station that they're also programming for Pacifica. So there are economies of scale that they can meet. If it's like an adjacent market or someplace else, they might want to do it because it extends their reach. It has another frequency. It has additional territory that it covers. It's another brand that they can promote that puts their own organization in a good light.
Lawrence.
You want to, I don't know if Ms. Kaufman wants to go.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize Kim would come back to the table. We're asking questions. We're going around the table. Members of the board are asking questions. If anyone from the public wants to ask a question, I've asked them to step up to the mic, and I'll call on them in rotation.
I'll pass for now and reserve my time for...
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question.
Thank you. Carolyn, did you have a question?
I did. Thank you.
Who are you?
Carolyn Burden from WBAI.
Question I have is, I realize the our debts will be paid.
Hold the mic this way.
I realize that our debts will not be paid. Thank you. But will this enhance our credit rating, or our reputation, or our ability to maneuver financially at all? If in fact the station enters into an LMA, what effect would that have on our standing in the field if we needed to borrow money or invite donors or investors at all? Would this have any effect on that that you know of in your experience with other situations?
Hi, this is Melody Virtue again. I don't know that I can answer that. It's really going to depend on how good a job the programmer does. It obviously would stop the losses, and in that sense, it would be good.
You're done? Okay, thank you. Lawrence, who are you?
Lawrence Reyes, KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
You're going to come around.
I asked you yesterday, I submitted a question, and the question was, I've read some of the proposals, and I won't get into detail because I guess I'm not supposed to. But one of the things that struck me was that the respect that the proposees have for Pacifica and the institution as a whole. My concern is that if this was to be agreed to do, my concern is that the community affected would have the opportunity to have a 90-day review and input period. And I believe what you responded to my question, that then they may not want to be left hanging. I don't know if those were your exact words. But the integrity of a proposal of this magnitude and the major decision to engage in such an agreement, I believe the community should have that opportunity to engage in a public input and review period.
We did talk about that last night, and it's really up to the board to decide whether to put that out to the public or not, and it might depend on which of the proposals it favors, whether or not they think that they should do that or not.
Thank you. Brenda Medina.
Is this mic on? Hello, test. Is it working?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jesus. So my question is, Brenda Medina from KPFK Los Angeles, former PMB member. I did get a chance to look over the LMA proposals back when I was on the PMB. And my question is in regards to being able to, can these PSOAs have a caveat to potentially buy the station is one question. The second question would be in terms of fund drives, we have sometimes coordinated fund drives throughout the network. Would we be able, if during this agreement, would we be able to do fund drive pitching during the hours that we are allocated within the PSOA agreement?
Yes, you would be able to do Pacifica fund drives during the time that you're allocated. This programmer can only use the airtime to fundraise on behalf of the station. It cannot use the airtime to fundraise on behalf of its own organization.
So we'll come back to you because we're going to continue. Janet Coleman, did you have a question?
I actually have a couple questions. Janet Coleman, WBAI.
Just for a moment. I'm having trouble remembering all the questions when people give me two and three questions, so let's do one at a time.
Right,
that would help
time.
Me.
Part of the significance of a PSOA or LMA for WBAI and Pacifica is the sustenance of the transmitter, our radio transmitter, the greatest radio signal in the greatest city in the world, and making sure that maintains its power for all of us. What do we do if the lessee defaults or dies, and how do we ascertain the source and the amount and the how do we guarantee the money? And as a P.S., what if the parent company of a PSOA or an LMA is a giant corporation or a government or is tied to a government or a corporation? How much influence could that corporation, the ownership, exert over the PSOA? How much could it change? Those are two questions, sorry. But they all involve, you know, how do we trust them?
If there's a default, then Pacifica can terminate the LMA. There's probably going to be a notice, an opportunity to cure period in the LMA. That's pretty standard in contracts. You get the other side 30 days, 60 days, whatever it's agreed when you enter it to provide notice and have them come into compliance. I'm not aware that a government is proposing to program the station. So I'm not sure where that's coming from.
If the parent company of a PSOA or an LMA is a government or is entwined with a government in some contractual agreement or a giant corporation, how much power and influence and decision-making would that parent company or might that parent company have over this agreement?
Well, once the agreement is negotiated, the programmer would have the opportunity to program the station within the parameters that are set forth in the agreement, which would relate to, you know, format type of issues. And I'm just saying generally format, like moving from news talk to, you know, adult contemporary. You know, those would be the kinds of things the licensee would reserve to itself. Otherwise, the programmer pretty much gets to put on the air what the programmer wants to put on the air based on what the outlines are of the agreement. So it's up to the parties to determine how they want to move forward together when they enter the agreement.
Let me just make clear my process. I'm going to keep going around the table, but I'm going to stop, let's say, after Manage and recognize Alex Steinberg, who's standing at the mic.
You said alternating.
I thought I said interspersed, but anyway, okay. I said alternate?
Yes.
Alex, you're up.
Point of information.
Yes, Kim?
Can you put me back in my...
Sure.
I have a question.
I'll check. You. I'll check back with people who didn't speak on the first round. Go ahead, Alex.
Okay. I have a lot of things to say about...
Say us who you are.
I'm Alex Steinberg. I'm here with the WBI Community Advisory Board.
Oh, let me say that this... your time will restart. So this is a... We're going around. We're asking the lawyer questions. There will be... don't we have a public comment period?
This afternoon at 4.
4 o'clock. Okay. So, and in this round, you only get 90 seconds. So,
1 minute.
Oh, 1 minute. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. My question is, in the best case scenario, the whole rationale for a PSOA LMA is that the lessee gets to program the station for a certain number of years and then returns the station back to Pacifica. And my question is, do you know of any situation historically where what's happened is that the lessee has created their own brand of programming with perhaps a minimal requirement to continue Pacifica's programming? Possibly, if they succeeded, built up an audience on the basis of that programming, and then at the end of the leasing period, return the station to the owner, and that station now, which has a different brand of programming, is suddenly reintroduced to Pacifica's kind of programming. Have you ever heard of a situation where that's actually succeeded and you've maintained your original audience and perhaps added some new audience?
Every LMA is unique in and of to itself because every station is different. these contracts, we do have certain parameters that we put in to satisfy FCC requirements. Most LMAs go on and they get renewed, and some don't. Sometimes the programmer decides that they don't want to do it anymore. And so your question, I think, is would the, you know, let's say the programmer is successful and has its own stamp of type of programming on the station, and at the end of the term, you know, whatever it is, 6, 7, 8 years, has it been successfully returned back to the licensee like that? And that may depend on how the agreement is drafted, because there might be a situation where a programmer might not want to allow the licensee to continue its format, but I think that would be against the public policy, you know, to do any kind of restrictions like that. I don't know of any situation personally where the LMA has ended and the licensee has picked up and continued what the programmer was doing, but I don't see why, if that's successful, the Pacifica wouldn't want to do that.
Well, just to clarify, because the owner may have had a mission or a certain kind of programming in mind. They gave it up in terms of the lease agreement, and then when it was returned, can the owner realistically be able to restore the kind of programming that was in compliance with their mission after somebody else has built up a different kind of programming?
That happens all the time when stations are sold. I mean, you're basically starting over from building your audience, though.
Okay, Rodrigo.
Yeah, this is Rodrigo from KPFK Los Angeles. And I want to reiterate the question made by one of the members of the public in terms of what is the possibilities of the lessee to buy at the end the radio station? And is it possible, or is that under the terms that, let's say, Pacifica would contract with this lessee if there is a stipulation where they can get, you know, at the end of certain years, you know, they can buy their signal? That's one question. And the other question is, what are the limitations or the implications of, you know, let's say, our foundation of, once you have this lessee using the equipment and using the building, using all, you know, that starts doing their own things and selling it to a private institution or making profit, even though they won't air that, but they would not be selling it, you know, to some third party. So it's two questions.
So basically, the first question related to the possibility that at the end of the term of the LMA, the programmer would buy it. And part of that might be the negotiation of the program service agreement. They might, as a condition of wanting to program the station, have an option to purchase the station at the end of the term or after a certain number of years. Or they might ask for a right of first refusal, which would be triggered only if Pacifica wanted to sell the station or received an offer and was seriously considering selling the station. Then that programmer would have the right to match the offer, because they're putting in a lot of their time and effort in taking risk and probably losing money in the startup phase while they're building up their audience. So that's part of that was your first part of your question. What was your second question again?
Second question is, what are the risk implications, you know, or possibilities, and how it would affect, you know, the Pacifica Foundation if these, you know, lessees start doing their own product and selling it to a third party?
The programmer, again, is subject to the terms of the agreement that get negotiated, and they would not be able to sell their own product because you can only fundraise for the station so long as it's a non-commercial educational station. You know, there's a rulemaking at the FCC where they're proposing to allow other nonprofits to be promoted on the station, you know, interrupting programming for that, but that hasn't passed yet. And that usually comes up with like church groups who are our licensees, and they want to fundraise for the church in addition to the station. And right now that's not legal under their FCC license. So there would not be an opportunity for the programmer to promote its own product outside of fundraising for the station.
What I meant is selling it, like, let's say...
Let's say there was an option, and the programmer exercised its option to buy it, then once you get FCC approval and you've closed on that purchase, Pacifica will have no right to control who owns the station, the second, third, fourth owner down the line.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mitchell Cohen.
Hi, I'm Mitchell Cohen from WBAI. Three questions quickly. You gave in response to Alex Steinberg's question, you said it happens all the time when stations are sold. We hopefully are not talking about selling the station. We're talking about leasing the station. So does it happen all the time that programming can revert back to what it had been when stations are leased? That's number one. Two, would it be illegal for this board to reveal the names of those submitting proposals, which is one of the rationales that we have been given for why it keeps going to executive session and that we can't discuss it in public? And we'd like to know the names of the people who have submitted those proposals. And third question is, would it be illegal for this board to pass a resolution to delay all consideration of all LMAs of all leasing the station for 6 months? Thank you.
All right, so you want a clarification on what I meant by saying it happens all the time when stations are sold? This is a general statement.
No, but we're talking about leasing, not selling here.
We're talking about program service operating agreements, and the question related to what if as a condition of entering that program service operating agreement, the proponent, the programmer, wanted an option to buy the station for some number of years. And what would happen if they exercised that option? Would Pacifica have any ability to control who owned the station
The question had to do with programming. Said Alex asked you if mm-hmm. you knew of any examples where a station had gone through an LMA and leased to someone else who changed the programming mm-hmm. dramatically, then it reverted back to the original. Would that? Do you know of any examples where that programming was reinstated to be in compliance with the Pacifica mission or the
well,
mission,
no,
whatever?
This is unique. This is unique for Pacifica. The only examples I would have would be non-Pacifica stations. And every station is unique. Every client is unique.
So
every
you know of examples that programming... I'm sorry. I don't mean... Yeah, okay. Yeah. We're not communicating.
Maybe
yet.
Somebody
yeah.
else.
Yeah, maybe someone else can frame the question.
Well, so let me say...
You wanted to know about names of proposals?
No.
The... Yeah. Yeah. That was one of your questions.
The names of the people making the proposals.
Those proposals, and I can't tell you off the top of my head, some of those proposals may have confidentiality requirements because they want their consideration of their proposal to be private and not public until a decision is made. And sometimes people don't want to let the public know that they're making this offer until there's a deal, which is very, very typical in transactions.
So you're saying that it would be illegal for this board to reveal the names of...
If the condition of the submission of the response to the RFP is that it be maintained confidential, yes, that would be a violation of a contract.
Okay.
And then your third question was, would it be illegal for this board to delay consideration? No. I mean, the board could delay consideration. The question is if in reality that is a possibility given the circumstances.
Just
to highlight on something I said last night, you know, sometimes when people, businesses, which nonprofits are, they're a business, sometimes when a business submits a proposal, they move on and they can't wait 6 months. And these have been submitted for some time already, several months, because of, you know, it just takes time to deliberate over these things. And at some point, they may just go away, and then that option is gone.
So just to reiterate, no, no, no. I just okay. wanted to hear about number two.
Your time's up, Mitchell.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Maybe someone else will ask
the
question.
I just wanted to know whether the RFP included a confidentiality point in it. That's all.
Okay. Well, the RFP is on the webpage, or maybe not anymore. Who is it up here? Tony Norman? Do you have any questions?
I'll pass.
Thank you. Manager. Who are you, please?
Yes, Manager Sabah, WBAI, New York. I have a number of questions.
Try asking two.
Yeah.
Okay.
1 minute.
Okay. Can the station raise funding on off-air during the lease, knowing that the station need to sustain itself and be ready to take over as soon as a problem arises or at the end of the lease? So is that a possibility? The other
yes.
question...
Yes.
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 Okay. Thank you. And who, at the end of the lease, if there is a lease, at the end of the lease, who would have control over the donors, you know, on-air donors, list of on-air donors at the end of the lease? Would WBAI get all of those names and the list and all of the information, or the programmer would hold that?
The any effort to raise money on air for the station has to go towards the station. If the donor, you know, if there's money left over, then, you know, technically the donor would have the right to direct where that money goes if it's not for the station.
No, I'm sorry. The question was that if the programmer keeps the list and information of the contributor that they were for the on-air fundraising that they have got money for example, whatever 8 years it was, they would have a list of people who have donated and they appeal to them again and again. Would that list to be is going to be released to the WBAI, or the programmer is going to keep that list of donors?
That is going to be dependent on whether they have donated in support of a specific program or to the station generally, and that would be an item to be negotiated in the contract. Usually the operator would keep its own, you know, we'd call it like client list, you know. But in the meantime, Pacifica has an obligation to look at the financial records for fundraising by the programmer for the station to make sure that those funds are being used for the station and not for somebody else.
I see someone from the public. Do you have a question for the lawyer? Please, please come forward and state your name. And you don't have to state your name. I forgot that. If you want to, you can.
I'm Star Bowie from Washington D.C. And I'm a little bit new to these things, so I'm sorry if this is something that's been covered. But what I am wondering, a couple of things. What if you have a situation where one of these right-wing conglomerates, and we're very conscious of this because of our recent history, sets up a nonprofit arm, they take over as a programmer, and even though they do programming that's within the parameters of the type of programming that Pacifica mandates, in fact, the content that they put on the air is extremely or relatively reactionary, so that they completely destroy you know, the kind of progressive base that WBAI has cultivated. What kind of control and essentially destroy the station, and these conglomerates have the ability to do that. How is that prevented? The second question I have is that I understand that that income that comes from...
I'm sorry, you only had 1 minute to ask your question, so do you just want to...
Okay, well, let me ask a second. This will be my third question. I read an article on Radio Survivor.com that said that the way this solicitation of bids was structured, it looked like it had been what they call in hiring wired. It was so precise. And I understand that one of the bidders is a station in New York that's devoted to music, but the one talk show host they do have is pretty far to the right as far as questions on the Middle East and Israel goes. And I just wondered, why does that thing look to me, a novice, as being very wired, that solicitation for bids? And why are we told that Summer Reese is identified this
your,
as a,
your
as
time,
a priority?
Your time is up.
Better. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're worried about right-wing conglomerates. That is really going to be something for this board to determine what the background is on the entities that have submitted proposals. So if it's not consistent with Pacifica's mission, they would not accept that proposal.
How would they know?
Because they would do their due diligence. So that's one thing. You asked if this was wired. I think the question, the RFP was very narrowly drawn so that it fits FCC procedures. And again, as the licensee, Pacifica has the obligation to make sure that its mission is served. The proposals that were requested were to be consistent with Pacifica's mission and also be consistent with its CSG community, CPB funding. And CPB does not allow, for instance, it has to be secular programming, so it couldn't be religious programming, for instance. They won't support that.